Chapter 14. The Year of the False Bargain. Dale Reckoning, 1118. If only. Dabney stirred from her deep slumber, rolling about in the thick, warm furs. She didn't open her eyes because she wanted to focus entirely on the softness and comfort. She knew where she was, on a quiet ledge on Menzo Berenzon's eastern wall, a safe place where few drow happened by, mostly because the area was thick with the stench of monster slaves. There were goblins here and kobolds, but they remained down below in their filthy hovels, and none would dare climb up to challenge a priestess and a weapon master. So here, ironically, Dabney and her lover could find moments of reprieve. At last, she stretched and opened her eyes. And as they adjusted to the low light on this darker end of Menzo Berenzon, she made out the silhouette of Zacnaphane, sitting on the edge, legs dangling over, taking in the view of the city. She crawled up behind him and draped her arms around his neck and shoulders. "It is beautiful, yes," she said. Far away, nearly a mile and a half, the giant pillar of Narbondale showed the early morning glow, a slight orange-red hue amid a sea of fairy fire-decorated stalagmites and stalactites, mostly blue and purple, but with every color of the spectrum represented. All of the giant cavern seemed a living, breathing thing, the lights shifting hue and intensity to fit the aesthetic demands of each house's demanding matron. The greater houses up on the Quellart's Orl carried the most magnificent designs within their accent lights. Such a serene facade for the always tumultuous City of Spiders, the city dedicated to the Lady of Chaos. It occurred to Dabney that anyone who entered the great cavern from this end without understanding the drow would look upon Menzo Berenzon with a first impression that would likely get them murdered or enslaved. Exactly as the matrons wanted it. Never before had Dabney considered that the appearance might be tactical and not simply pretty dressing. But now here it all made sense. "It should be beautiful," Zacnaphane replied rather sourly. "Think of the power concentrated there, among those lights and shadows," Dabney said, snuggling a bit closer. "Who but the gods and great lords of the lower planes could come against us and survive?"
"The power to build whatever we choose," Zacnaphane agreed. "Except that we are so busy killing each other that we dare not look beyond our own walls. Walls that we have built against each other more than any outsiders."
"So busy killing each other," Dabney slyly echoed, smirking. "Something that Zacnaphane is quite adept at doing, I seem to recall."
The weapon master shrugged and glanced back at the woman. "If not, then I would be long dead. And does it matter? If I didn't kill them, I'm sure they could find others to offer their blades for the task."
"How many others feel the same, I wonder?" Dabney asked.
"Not enough," he said. "And so it perpetuates until perhaps we kill enough of each other to allow some other people to come in and pay us back for our viciousness."
"Our viciousness? It was their viciousness that put us here in the first place."
Zacnaphane's little responding laugh was so full of resignation that it gave Dabney pause.
"It was Corallon Lorethion who betrayed us," Dabney reminded him. "Corallon, who is god to the elves of the surface worlds, who gave us to Lolth, gave us as if we were Rothay cattle."
"Yet you love Lolth," Zacnaphane retorted. Dabney knew that her hesitation was likely quite telling, but she was truly taken aback and couldn't react fast enough. Love was not the word she would use to describe her feelings for the Spider Queen. She feared Lolth and understood her duty to Lolth, and so she was devoted to Lolth. Because to be otherwise in Menzo Berenzon was to be abandoned and likely soon dead.
"Do not most people of all races love their goddesses?" she asked.
trying to find some way around this uncomfortable line of discussion, particularly with one as blunt and cynical as Zachnephane de Werden.
Do they? Or do they love having their fear of death assuaged?
Devotion is more than fear, she insisted.
It can be. But with the notion of gods in an afterlife, I expect it most usually is not.
Zachnephane answered.
The fear of death is too pervasive, as is the fear of never again seeing those we love.
He gave another of his helpless chuckles, dripping with resignation and venom.
But then, we are so afraid that we don't dare love, do we?
Daphne buried her face in Zachnephane's hair and did not answer. Not with words, anyway. But he felt her sobs, surely. And that should be sufficient.
We're all trapped,
he whispered. To the city and to himself, she knew. And not specifically to her.
We have been ruled by fear for so long that we are afraid of being afraid.
Lolf taught us that we are superior, Daphne did say then, because she was indeed afraid at that moment, afraid that even such a conversation as this would throw her from the favor of the Spider Queen. A priestess without that favor, even one without official title anymore, would be vulnerable indeed. Would you rather we grovel beneath the evil elves, or crouch in the mines of smelly dwarfs, or beg for acceptance from the short-lived, stupid humans?
No, of course not, he replied.
And Daphne thought she heard a hint of sarcasm creeping in.
Better that we hold fast to a grievance that has been passed down through generations, about an incident that may or may not have actually occurred, and perhaps or perhaps not in the manner in which we've been taught. Blasphemy, she whispered in stern warning. Is it, though? Would it be against the edicts of the Spider Queen for Matron Mother Beanry or any other matron to so tilt the very history of the elven races to her own benefit?
Zachnephane answered. It was a question that Daphne had privately considered many times, and one that she expected almost every other drow had asked of herself or himself many times.
Prisoners, Zachnephane whispered. All of us. In jails of our own making.
Is life so bad for you, Zachnephane? She asked, and she squeezed him tighter and nuzzled his neck. To think so now, at this particular moment, well, truly, you wound me. That brought a smile from him, she was glad to see. Both fell silent then, and just stared at the dancing and glowing fairy fires of Menzo Berenzon, enjoying the beautiful stillness, even though they knew it a lie. Only a couple of days later, Zachnephane ducked down a dark alleyway in the Brayerin. He thought himself a fool for coming here on word from Daphne alone, and figured that he was walking to his doom. But the prize was simply too great to ignore. At the end of a straight avenue between two structures, he moved cautiously around a stalagmite that formed the right-hand corner of the alley bend and peered ahead. This second juncture was also empty, with the path varying in width, but not enough to create any hidden alcoves. Zachnephane didn't know this place, but he had already circled the buildings and stalagmites forming this alley network, and was confident that if the prize was waiting, it would be around that second bend. He crept down, silent as death. He peered around. Arathis Hune stood only 10 strides away, leaning on the alley's back wall, a doorway to his left for a quick exit. Zachnephane could turn this into an ambush, he knew, considering the man's posture. Arathis Hune wasn't holding weapons. He was expecting someone, but not Zachnephane. No, he was expecting Daphne, and so he had no reason to be overly on his guard. If he came around in a full charge, Zachnephane would hold all the initiative, and he was superior to Arathis Hune, and so would likely end the fight before it could ever truly begin. But Zachnephane shook his head and walked around instead, openly, his weapons sheathed, to face his foe. Arathisune's expression revealed his surprise. He came up off the wall to stand straight, hands going to his sides.
"What are you doing here?"
"You were expecting someone else?" Zacnaphane replied.
"Or I was expecting no one at all."
"You come here to ponder the meaning of life?" Arathisune scowled at him.
"Or perhaps to consider the deceit that guides your every move, the treachery that fills your heart, the inability to determine friend from foe?"
Zacnaphane kept walking as he spoke, finishing within 3 strides of the man.
"What spittle falls from your lips, Zacnaphane?" Arathisune demanded. "You deny it?"
"Probably," Arathisune answered with a snicker.
"What am I denying?"
"My fight with Duvan Trayrock," said Zacnaphane, "was not fairly waged."
"Wagered?"
"The betting was open, and for many of us quite profitable."
"Waged," Zacnaphane reiterated. "Duvan cheated, or someone cheated for him."
"Not very well, then," the man returned dryly.
"From what I have heard, Arathisune did not fare so well in his betting," Zacnaphane said.
"Ask Jarlaxle about the bags of gold I returned to him."
"Jarlaxle's gold? What of your own?"
"Why would that be of concern to Zacnaphane?"
"Because someone cheated on behalf of Duvan."
"Are you accusing me?"
"I am."
"You know the workings of men's aberrants on, Weapon Master, and so I urge you now as your friend to caution. One does not make such accusations without—"
"Do not think to act my better and teach me the ways of our people. I'm well aware of what I say, but know this. I am making the accusation only to you, openly and alone, standing right here before you.
An accusation I deny."
"Of course you do. But it is my experience that most cheaters are also liars."
Arathisune snickered.
100 eyes were on that fight. What might I have done? Quaveline Oblodra."
Zacnaphane interrupted. Arathisune's expression changed rather dramatically at that moment, and he suddenly seemed quite uninterested in replying. Both realized there was nothing left to say. Both drow drew out their weapons, 2 swords for Zacnaphane, a sword and a long dirk for Arathisune. Zacnaphane started forward quickly, bringing up his opponent's blades. He cut fast to the right and leaped up onto the alley's side wall, then immediately sprang back the other way in a sidelong somersault, landing with solid footing and soft legs that bent to absorb the weight of the landing and to redirect him forward to finish the charge he had started. Now, though, Arathisune wasn't quite as square with him, having followed the break to the side with both his eyes and posture. He had to cross-block with his sword, coming across right to left to intercept the downward chop of Zacnaphane's right-hand blade, then making a slight turn to catch Zacnaphane's sword before sliding fast and hard back the other way. He surprised the Weapon Master then, though, by not completing the returning block with that sword against Zacnaphane's second thrusting blade. Instead, Arathisune ran his right hand under the engaged swords, his dagger neatly catching Zacnaphane's sword, which he turned inward and across as he turned his hips the other way. Arathisune had escaped the initial engagement, and now ran 2 strides to leap up against the rear wall of the alley, angling so that his second spring brought him to the wall to Zacnaphane's left, and there angling so that his third leap, adding a tight somersault, landed him beside the spot, but now to the side and ready to take the initiative. Except Zacnaphane wasn't there. For as Arathisune had begun his retreat, Zacnaphane had instantly measured the likely angles and jumps he had planned, and so Zacnaphane had rushed and jumped out to the right-hand wall, up high, catching a ledge, springing again even higher from that point, tossing his right-hand sword up high while catching the top of the doorframe with his right hand to begin a swing that sent him against the back wall to rebound high and into a backward somersault. He noted Arathisune's progress as he executed that move and tucked his legs to properly time his own landing. He came down an eye blink after Arathisune, appearing suddenly before the puzzled man. Xacnaphane caught his descending sword up high, even as his left-hand blade worked fast to properly align his opponent's blocking sword and dagger, keeping them too low for a deflection of the higher strike. Just like that, Xacnaphane had him. The Doerden weapon master could have gained a great advantage by charging straight in instead of engaging his enemy with banter, Matron Sulez Armgo told her visitor. The two women stared into a scrying pool of still water to watch the events unfolding in the prescribed alleyway. Xacnaphane would not do that, Dabney Trayrock replied to the powerful matron. She shifted nervously, wondering, and not for the first time, if she had made a terrible mistake here. He is too honorable. Too stupid, you mean? He will not survive for long. Matron Malice has undeniably caught herself a fine fighter, but unless he becomes a great killer, he'll just be another rotting corpse soon. Dabney started to reply, but caught herself and just nodded. She tried not to wince and thus betray her emotions towards Xacnaphane. But inside, the woman's stomach was twisting with anxiety. It was more pain than she had imagined possible when she had taken the deal offered her by Matron Sulez and had quietly arranged this fight. She focused on the images revealed in the magical pool, then watching her magnificent lover in a great struggle with an able opponent for the second time in a 10-day. As great as Xacnaphane had been against Duvan, now, with more room and fewer observers about, she saw him in all his glory, leaping, spinning, landing in line for the next attack. She began to breathe a bit easier, growing confident that Arathisune could not defeat Xacnaphane. But then the image, unexpectedly, blinked out to blackness. Xacnaphane went for the kill, his caught sword aimed perfectly for the assassin's skull. But then Xacnaphane got hit. He felt as if a large Rothay had kicked him. His sensibilities flew from him, his thoughts scrambling and flying off in shocked tangents. He tried to bring his swords up defensively, only to realize that he wasn't even holding the weapons anymore. The realization hit him starkly, as he understood then that he was hopelessly, helplessly vulnerable. He stumbled aside toward the back wall of the alley, but couldn't even control his muscles enough to hold his balance, and down he crumpled, expecting Arathisune to come up over him and cut him apart. Only after he had settled, seated against that wall, did he realize that his opponent too had been hit. Arathisune was facing the alley entrance, taking staggered steps, trying to hold his footing, but futilely, for he toppled hard to the stone. Xacnaphane heard the sharp thump as Arathisune's face hit the cavern floor. He could make no sense of that, of any of it, until he glanced past Arathisune to see a familiar figure walking calmly down the alleyway. Jarlaxle bent before Arathisune and retrieved the man's weapons, then tossed them back the other way down the alley. Then Jarlaxle took Xacnaphane's swords, rolling them about in his hands, holding them at the ready. Xacnaphane was still groggy, still trying to get his sensibilities in line with the events unfolding before him, whatever they might be. It was not, he heard Arathisune say, the man's voice slurred and his speech broken, as he too had not yet recovered from whatever it was that had struck the fighting pair. I care not, Jarlaxle sternly replied. My thoughts on this have been made clear to both of you. Xacnaphane attacked me, Arathisune replied, his voice growing steadier. Go and retrieve your weapons and keep moving, Jarlaxle ordered. Out of the alley, out of the Brayrin. You and I meet tomorrow when Narbondel's light begins to glow once more. Arathisune started to reply, but Jarlaxle interrupted with, Go! Xacnaphane managed to pull himself to a seated position. Looking back down the alley, watching his enemy depart and another drow, one he did not know, coming forward, passing the assassin without any acknowledgement at all, as far as Xacnaphane could determine. And you, Jarlaxle said to the unknown associate, what am I to do with Xacnaphane? You've already done it, Xacnaphane reminded him. for Zacnaphane is Doerden and not Bregan the Earth.
Jarlaxle sighed.
You are the betting king, Zacnaphane told him. Another match, then. Put that foul hewn in the alley and do not bet against me. On this one, I promise, do not bet against me.
We've already had this talk, Jarlaxle countered.
Zacnaphane looked past him to the newcomer Drow, a very young man, he seemed, who stood a few steps behind Jarlaxle and appeared rather bored with this all.
You are both valuable to me, Jarlaxle said, drawing his attention again. More valuable than a few sacks of gold coins. We three have many years of growing power ahead of us, my friend, and you trying to kill each other would put a serious damper on my plans.
To the abyss with your plans. He tried to have me killed by cheating. If Arathas Yun had gotten his way, I would be dead by Duvan's hand.
Jarlaxle shrugged. We are drow. This is our way. We kill when we see gain. But for one of you to die, that would be to no one's advantage here. Arathas Yun does not appreciate the true power of Bregan the Earth quite yet, perhaps, but he will come to see the benefit for us all with Zacnaphane on our side.
You're a clever fool, Zacnaphane said. He didn't try to keep his anger out of his tone. And a bigger fool when you believe you are at your most clever.
Again, we are drow. Have you not figured out what that means?
Tell me, Jarlaxle, what does that mean? That we should expect deception and treachery, that none are worth trusting?
Yes, to both.
Yet you ask me to trust you, Zacnaphane said, and Jarlaxle for once seemed at a loss for words.
Behind Jarlaxle, the young man snickered.
Who are you? Zacnaphane demanded angrily.
This is Kimuriel, Jarlaxle answered.
No one you want to anger, Zacnaphane heard in his mind, and it all came together for him then. He had heard the name Kimuriel before, in connection with House Oblodra, those of the mind magics.
Mind magics, like the unseen blast that had sent both Zacnaphane and Arathas Yun spinning to the ground. Like the kind Hune had used against him in the duel against Duvan.
Zacnaphane turned his glare over Jarlaxle again, now focusing on the mercenary leader's eye patch and wondering if there was some way he might borrow it, just long enough for a single strike. Dabney kept glancing at the black scrying pool, betraying her nervousness. She had arranged the fight, indeed, in order to garner the favor of Matron Sulez, who was trying to protect Uthagentil. The hulking weaponmaster of House Barrison Delarmgo had long been watching Zacnaphane, reportedly. Dabney knew Uthagentil only from afar, but even that cursory understanding of the man made it clear to her why Sulez was so interested in being rid of Zacnaphane. Not only would that wound the ever-ambitious matron Malus Doerden and likely halt her ascent, but it would stop the valuable Uthagentil from battling the man, a fight Uthagentil would likely, but not certainly, win. What a disaster Uthagentil falling to Zacnaphane would be for Sulez Armgo. Dabney looked to the matron, who was also staring at the darkened pool and seemed none too happy.
What do you think happened, matron? Dabney dared to ask.
Matron Sulez snapped her glare over to the priestess. Despite her station, Sulez wasn't much older, Dabney believed. But there was no question of their relative power. Dabney struggled with the basics of the religion, while Sulez was a powerful high priestess and now a matron. And Sulez played the game of Menzo Baranzon better than almost anyone. Her house was not as openly ambitious as House Doerden. But the Armgos were likely to sit their matron on the ruling council sooner. And certainly Sulez was destined for a higher seat on that council than Malus Doerden could ever hope to achieve. If the two houses ever went to war, Malus would likely be dead within an hour. If Zacnaphane were no longer in the picture, he might add another hour. The pool began to shimmer once more, finally, and the alleyway came back into focus. The empty alleyway.
There is no blood, Dabney observed. You will go and find out what happened, Sulez told her, immediately.
Dabney shuffled nervously from foot to foot. She had no idea which of the two remained alive, if not both. She had no idea whether someone had intervened, perhaps someone who had learned of her visits to House Barris and Delarmgo, and so had figured out her role in arranging this fight.
Arathisune would certainly murder her if he learned of that. Zacnaphane might not kill her, she thought, but in a way that might be even more painful.
Because she realized now, she did love him. And yet she had arranged for him to very possibly be killed.
Dabney looked from the image in the scrying pool over to Matron Sulez. The woman had offered her so much, too much for her to refuse. No matter who won the fight, Dabney would climb within Bregendier through simple elimination of one higher up than she. But Sulez had also promised her a place in House Barris and Delarmgo. She would become a priestess in a powerful house, and one that Dabney could not help but respect, mostly because of how expertly Matron Sulez had kept it away from the attention that could lead it to disaster. One reason it kept such a low profile, and also a reason behind so much of its power, was how Sulez's house used its men, specifically drawing strength from warriors and wizards, and not from its clergy, which was sparse and mostly unimpressive. The arrogant matrons of the other houses could not comprehend or would not admit the power of Barris and Delarmgo without the appropriate balance of priestesses. And yet, despite its seemingly low ranking among houses, Barris and Delarmgo was dismissed at the other matron's peril. With all that, the path for Dabney was alluring. If she could be brought into the house, her competition in the altar room would be akin to that she had known in House Trayrac, an even lesser house. Other than Matron Sulez and perhaps her promising young daughter, Mes Barris, there was little divine power to oppose her. Yes, Dabney would like that, and she would know safety for the first time since her days in House Trayrac. She looked back at the scrying pool. A big part of her hoped Zacnaphane had won the fight and Arathisune was dead. But a bigger part hoped that the two had killed each other. She didn't want to admit that, not even to herself, but she told herself repeatedly that there was no place for love in Menzo Baranzon, and even less place for honor. Even if Zacnaphane had not been killed by her interference, how long might he survive? And how long would she survive, she wondered, as she departed House Barris and Delarmgo? A question that would be raised again not long after when she went to the Oozing Myconid and learned from barkeep Harbendare that both Zacnaphane and Arathisune had walked out of that alleyway due to the interference of Jarlaxle himself. Dabney retired immediately to one of her many rooms scattered throughout the city, and there she remained for several days, even summoning her own food and drink so that she would not be near to any potential assassins. She played through every scenario she could think of, given the disaster of the failure in the alleyway. Would Zacnaphane try to kill her? Would Arathisune? Would Matron Sulez? She had to be prepared for the first two, but not the latter, and certainly not the possibility of both or all three at once. That compounded her nerves, for the two men would approach revenge very differently. And who could know how the cunning matron would play it? For the moment, though, it was the two men that preyed on her thoughts, especially when she considered that perhaps they would both come to see the role she had played and figure out why she had done so and so come after her in unison. Few in the city could survive a determined murder attempt by those two. Many times over the next half-10 day, Dabney told herself that she was being foolish, that her role in the fight had been a minor thing after all, and that it was more likely that both Zacnaphane and Arathis would thank her than blame her for the chance at killing the other. Still, when the soft knock came on her door on the 5th day of her self-imposed exile, poor Dabney nearly jumped out of her slippers. She moved to the door and listened. "Don't bother opening it," came a voice from behind her, and she whirled about to see Jarlaxle sitting on the edge of her bed. "I only bothered to knock to announce that you had a visitor."
"Well met, then," Dabney replied, trying to stay calm.
I was about to have some supper. I have gotten quite good at summoning feasts that are as tasty as they are filling. Would you care to join me?
How could I possibly refuse? Asked the ever-cagey mercenary. Dabney had not been lying about her growing proficiency in summoning food and drink, and she conjured up a feast worthy of the station of her guest, to which Jarlaxle added his own touch by producing a bottle of vintage fey wine from his magical pouch.
You have not been about of late, Jarlaxle remarked, almost as soon as they had started their meal.
I grew worried that perhaps I had lost a powerful ally. Bregan d'Aerth is not rich in those with divine powers, of course.
Just that, of course, Dabney replied, a bit more testily than she had intended. As she considered her reflexive response and Jarlaxle's answering, dumbfounded expression, she really didn't care at that moment. Perhaps it was past time that someone put this arrogant rogue in his place.
Do you need a proclamation of mutual interest and benefit? Jarlaxle asked.
I do not even know what that means, she answered. She knew what she really wanted, but wasn't about to say it. The proclamation that Dabney desperately wanted was one of friendship and loyalty. She wasn't going to get it, though, and knew that she couldn't. Rarely would a drow in Menzo Berenzon leave himself that vulnerable.
I am glad that you are well, Priestess Dabney, truly. He lifted his fey wine in a toast to her.
She accepted that, even tapped her glass against his, and told herself that she should be satisfied with that, for it was more than most would get from any dark elf. She believed it, too, and would have believed Jarlaxle if he had indeed called her a friend, just as she believed that Zacnaphane truly cared for her. As she took her sip, she was glad the glass was hiding her frown, for Dabney realized that the cruel little woman she had thrown in with, Matron Sules Armgo, would never see her that way. Never.
How fare your two lieutenants? She asked.
Three.
That was a surprise to Dabney, and her heart flitted a bit. Was he offering her such a position?
I have found a third, Jarlaxle went on. A new companion to us all, and one whose value cannot be underestimated.
Dabney stared at him blankly.
You will meet him soon enough, I expect.
Who?
Jarlaxle held up his hand and shook his head.
It is not my place to introduce him when he is not beside me.
Dabney took another drink, this time to hide her scowl.
As to Zacnaphane and Arathis Hune, Jarlaxle said, they are well. Zacnaphane is back by Matron Malice's side, and there to stay for some long while, I would think. She'll not risk him again any time soon. Whispers say that Matron Malice is preparing another ascent among the city hierarchy.
Dabney knew that his slip of the tongue in referring to Matron Malice as simply Malice was Jarlaxle's way of taking a measure of her. She was a priestess of Loth, and no true priestess of Loth would let such a break in etiquette go unscolded. But Dabney remained impassive.
Arathis Hune is out of the city, Jarlaxle went on, apparently satisfied with her lack of response. His mission might take him all the way to Ched Nassad.
Dabney searched Jarlaxle's red eyes for a hint of deception. Wouldn't that be a convenient story to get her off her guard, so that Arathis Hune could kill her quickly? He continued.
When do you expect to be returned to the using my Conid?
That I might meet your new lieutenant, she answered coldly. Do you expect me to bow?
To no one, Jarlaxle was quick to reply. Of course not. Ah, dear Dabney, I hear the anger behind your words, and I understand it. But I am surprised to have to explain this to you. You will never assume a position in the top ranks of Bregan d'Aerth, not openly at least. Do you think that Matron Mother Bayenry and the others of the ruling council would ever allow such a thing of a priestess of Loth? As far as they are concerned, as far as they must ever be concerned, you are an associate,
an independent priestess who sometimes works with Bregan de Aerith and always with fine recompense.
As one can discern from my lavish surroundings, Dabney replied sarcastically.
Jarlaxle rose to leave. He paused and looked around the large and somewhat well-furnished room, which they both knew was one of several Dabney owned. Better this than where Dabney found herself after the disaster of House Treyrock's attack on House Simfrey.
A battle my house won.
A battle you lost, Jarlaxle corrected, to the death of Matron House.
Only because she started to argue, her ire flaring.
Jarlaxle stopped her with an upraised hand. It was a drow house war, he said. There is no only because. House Treyrock found disaster because greater forces than House Simfrey were allied against them, including you.
Including me.
Which is the only reason you survived, or your brother for that matter.
The two stared at each other for a long while. Then Jarlaxle tapped his forehead in a semi-salute and departed through the room's door, which was locked, but which opened to his verbal call before he ever touched it.
Dabney sat there for a long while, not even bothering to get up and shut the door, pondering the conversation. Jarlaxle had openly placed a limitation upon her ascent within his mercenary band, but strangely, she was not angry, and was not even glad then that she had thrown in her lot with Matron Sulez. It took her a while to sort through that seeming paradox. If she couldn't climb the ladder of Bregan de Aerith, shouldn't she logically want to join House Barrison Delarmco? But Dabney couldn't deny the truth of Jarlaxle's reasoning. Were he to elevate Dabney or any other priestess within his band to a position of official leadership, particularly now that Bregan de Aerith was growing quite powerful, some of the matrons would likely see them as a threat, perhaps even as a potential new house, and one more dangerous because it was mobile, ethereal even, and with business connections to the greatest houses in the city. She couldn't sort through it. Not then. Nor was she sure how she felt about Zacnaphane being trapped within House Dewarden. She missed his caress and his kiss, but perhaps it was for the better. At least with him in there beside Malice, the cruel Sulez could not soon try to arrange his demise once again. Dabney got up and went to close the door, carefully checking the hallway. She hoped that Arathis Yun was really out of the city, and hoped, too, that he would stay away for a long, long time.